Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up, in Jerusalem, the public gets a peek at a new catalog of Hebrew manuscripts contained in the Vatican's library. Looking ahead to Pope Benedict's pilgrimage to the Holy Land, we begin a series of Lenten reflections on the places where Jesus and his family lived in the land we call holy. And we turn to the African continent to recall the Pope's message of penitence, fasting, and charity this Lent. An impressive catalog of Hebrew manuscripts in the Vatican Apostolic Library was recently presented here in the Vatican, and on Tuesday this week it was to make its debut in Jerusalem at Israel's National Library and Hebrew University. The thick volume lists all of the Vatican Library's some 800 medieval manuscripts penned or printed in Hebrew. The project represents an important effort towards greater cultural collaboration between Israeli and Vatican institutions. While the catalog compiled by the Institute of Microfilmed Hebrew Manuscripts at the National Library of Israel in Jerusalem was published by the Vatican Apostolic Library in April 2008, Professor Maliki Beit Aryeh, Professor of Codicology and Paleography at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, was one of two Jewish scholars to have spent 5 years studying the manuscripts in the Vatican Library.
While the Biblioteca Apostolica Vaticana accumulated and preserved one of the most important collections of Hebrew medieval manuscripts, we in Jerusalem are engaged in cataloging all the manuscripts in the world. And the joint project was to prepare, to produce a very detailed catalog, which will cover all the manuscripts, all the Hebrew manuscripts, the Vatican Library, in a very update manner, including identification of the date and the locality of production of all the manuscript, and of course a very detailed analysis of the text. And it was carried out by a large team of scholars in Jerusalem and by two of us who were working in situ at the library for over 5 years in treating mainly the physical aspect and the so-called codicological aspects of the manuscript. The library granted us more than a warm welcome, but any assistance that we needed, and they encouraged us in this project. We eventually prepared the catalog, and the Biblioteca Vaticana printed it and published it as a joint project.
Is some of this material digitalized, available on the internet?
First of all, the catalog, which is about 800 pages, is very short. It will be available online in both sites of the National Library in Jerusalem and at the site of the Vatican Library. As for the... If you mean digitized online access to all the manuscript, this is still a dream. I hope it will come through.
What does this mean for scholars of the antiquities in the Holy Land?
Well, it means to hundreds and hundreds of scholars all over the world who are dealing with the Jewish heritage, classical and medieval texts, many faceted texts of in Hebrew characters, and that covers from biblical studies to medieval science and medicine and philosophy and literature and everything.
You sound very excited about it.
Oh yes.
What does it mean for you and your own studies?
In my own studies, the Vatican has the best collections of Hebrew manuscripts with regard to my own discipline, which is paleography and codicology, the history of medieval book, and the Vatican boasts on many, many remarkable items which are constantly studied and will be studied.
Have you cooperated as well with some of the other pontifical commissions or institutes, for example, for sacred archaeology?
No, because we deal in archaeology of the book and with the medieval manuscript. So our cooperation was strictly between the National Library and the Hebrew University in Jerusalem and the staff, the wonderful staff of the Biblioteca Apostolica Vaticana.
Prefect of the Vatican Library, Monsignor Cesare Pazzini, describes the catalog as an extraordinary collection, fruit of some 10 years of study, and what he calls exemplary collaboration between the cultural institutions of the Holy See and Israel. Well, Monsignor Pazzini says that even the manuscripts themselves offer an example of joint collaboration between Christians and Jews. Some of the Vatican manuscripts, for example, were commissioned by important representatives of the Jewish community in Europe, but the inscriptions, the binding, and the illustrations were carried out by Christians. While working together with Jewish cultural institutions, Monsignor Pazzini says, illustrates the Apostolic Library's universal mission at the service of culture. When people join forces in research, some of the most surprising discoveries and achievements can be made.
The Vatican has a spirit of universality, and the spirit of universality is the spirit of the culture. In the culture, we collaborate together, and if I have a fruit of my research and you have another fruit, we can together proceed in the research.
To combine the research together.
Yes. The fruit is not my fruit, but is a fruit, the world fruit of the collaboration of many, many people. It's impossible that I alone arrive to a great discovery, or we have to search the meaning of the reality. We have to understand what is true, but I cannot arrive alone. I need the collaboration of other people in every research, not only in the great questions. When I have to find the content of the manuscript, the author of the script, the hand of the scribe. When a researcher finds something and has time to study, this is a very great possibility. And a library is the place where you have find possibility and help to do it.
And the Vatican Library, of course, is one of the most important in the world.
Yes, there are many important libraries, but Vatican has a very great tradition and a very great number of materials, manuscripts, printed books, and so. We have this attitude to go on in research to serve people coming. I'm new in the library, I'm prefect. But I found that very good situation. People coming, researchers coming in the library, find a very good accoglienza. How is
reception?
Reception, yes.
Mm-hmm. No, I was talking to some of the Hebrew scholars, and they were saying very much that they were felt extremely welcomed.
They told me that they were satisfied because of everyone helping them, the distributor too, not only the scholars in our library.
While the road to dialogue with the Jewish and other faiths may sometimes be a bumpy one, Israel's ambassador to the Holy See, Mordechai Levy, says the cooperation between the Vatican Library and Israeli institutions represents an important cultural initiative that shouldn't be underestimated.
I think that this is a very important occasion to show how important cultural collaboration between Israel and the Santa Sede is. I think we will be poor if we will only restrict the dimension of the relations to political and religious dimensions. The cultural is very important, and today was a good presentation what can be done in good spirit and in good cooperation also for the future. The dimension should be very enriched, and I think this was today an enrichment of the relations.
Israel's ambassador to the Holy See, Mordechai Levy. As we begin the Lenten season, we present a series of reflections with Father Peter Stravinskas, a noted scholar, author, and apologist. He is founder of the Priestly Society of the Venerable Cardinal John Henry Newman and editor of the Catholic Response. Each week, Father Stravinskas takes me and our listeners on a tour of the holy places where Jesus and his family walked and lived in the Holy Land. Today, he begins with a reflection on the holy town of Nazareth in Galilee, today in modern Israel. This was the village where the young Virgin Mary and later the Holy Family lived. Pilgrims visiting Nazareth today can pray at the Basilica of the Annunciation, which was built over the cave which Mary had made her home, and where it is believed the angel Gabriel came to her, announcing that God had chosen her to bear the Messiah.
The message of salvation is literally incarnated in our history, and God chooses to work with and through history to continue to reveal himself. And here we see the Virgin of Nazareth cooperating with God's plan. And from that very moment forward, as the New Testament really begins, we find that God chooses to limit himself to human responses. Our Lady very easily could have said, no, forget about it. I got to get my hair done today. It's not going to work. But as a matter of fact, she cooperates with the Father's plan. And as a result, the greatest event in human history takes place. God is able to enter into our affairs. This is something that is really the root of the so-called sacramental principle as well, that God then uses throughout salvation history very human means to achieve our salvation. As the fathers of the church were fond of talking about, the flesh is the hinge of salvation, caro cardo salutis, so that God uses these created realities and our human effort in union with His grace to bring about the salvation. St. Augustine says, the God who created you without you will not justify you without you. We have to participate in the process, and Our Lady and Nazareth stand to me as very strong reminders of that reality.
Many months after Mary said yes to the Lord in Nazareth, she and Joseph traveled south to Bethlehem to register for the census of the population ordered by the Emperor Augustus. It was here in the small village, surrounded by olive groves and fields where shepherds tended their flocks, that Mary gave birth to the Christ child. Over the centuries, bit by bit, a massive stone basilica has been built up over the humble stable, the cave where He was born. Today, pilgrims to the Basilica of the Nativity can make their way through a series of Orthodox chapels to arrive at a set of narrow steps that lead down to the grotto. A burnished bronze star marks the place where Jesus once laid His head. Though the basilica remains the focal point of Bethlehem, today part of the Palestinian territories, many local Christians have fled the violence and the economic hardships to live abroad. But how should we reflect on Christ's birth in Bethlehem this Lent? Despite all the hardships facing the small Christian community, indeed all Palestinians living there, shouldn't it be Christmas in Bethlehem every day of the year?
Of course, Christmas ought to be every day in the heart of every Christian. When we think about Bethlehem, one of the first things that strikes me is the fact that St. Jerome, who gives us the great line that ignorance of the Scriptures is ignorance of Christ, was so intent on getting it all right that he himself went to the Holy Land before embarking on his project of translating the Scriptures into Latin, the famous Latin Vulgate. And he went and lived in a cave in Bethlehem. And interestingly enough, he gives us a fascinating expression. He refers to the Holy Land itself as the fifth gospel. Because simply by being there, one breathes in everything that brings us the message of salvation. And when you go to the Church of the Nativity, there's also the grotto of St. Jerome, where he lived in a cave. And also interesting, Jerome was so intent on getting it right with the language that he hired a rabbi to teach him Hebrew. So he got it directly from the direct source. But in the Church of the Nativity itself, and I'm always very partial to the Feast of Christmas, because it happens to be my birthday as well. And but in order to get into that church, you have to bend down, and it's called the Door of Humility.
It's a very small door.
Yes. Well, of course, there was a practical reason, as you undoubtedly know, was to keep out the animals and keep out the invaders. But there's also a profound theological message to that. One has to bow down in order to appreciate the mystery of the Incarnation. This is not something that just comes automatically. One can't sit down and come up with a mathematical scientific formula to say, of course this all makes perfect sense. In a very real sense, it doesn't make sense. And it's interesting that just as there's the door of humility to get into the Church of the Nativity, there's also the need to bow down to get into the tomb of Christ. In order to understand, even in our limited human way, the mystery of the resurrection, one also needs the virtue of humility.
In the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
In the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Mm-hmm. At the two endpoints, really, we could say, of our Lord's earthly existence, his birth in Bethlehem and his resurrection in Jerusalem, in order for us today to get into physically those sites, we have to adopt the mentality of humility in order to appreciate that. And I'm always reminded when thinking about Christmas, some of the tremendous insights that Archbishop Fulton Sheen had in this regard. And he said, it's interesting that at Bethlehem, it's only the very wise or the very humble that have access to the Christ child. The shepherds and the Magi. And he says, and Christ seems always to appeal to either of those two groups, and people stuck in the middle who are self-important, who are arrogant. The mark of a truly wise man is that he knows that he doesn't know an awful lot. And the poor shepherds, they knew that they were ignorant. And to those two groups, the angels are able to give the message of salvation, and they're able to receive it. And therefore, for us to receive, to accept the meaning of the mystery of the Incarnation, we too have to adopt this attitude that we don't know everything. And modern man is so proud of all his great accomplishments, but at the same time, if we look at the history, for example, of the century that we just left, the bloodiest century in history, and yet with the greatest technological advances, and we have to understand, of course, it's the first century in history which attempted to go it formally, institutionally, without God. We can laugh at the Greek gods and the Roman gods and the Egyptian gods and all the rest of it, and joke about their naivete, that they thought these were great things. But the truth of the matter is they had that basic human instinct that there was a dimension beyond themselves and that they were answerable to someone or something beyond themselves. The mark of the 20th century was precisely the opposite. It was man was the center of everything, and when that happens, of course, there's a complete, ironically, a complete dehumanization. If we enter into the mystery of the Incarnation, and as we say in every Mass, as the priest mingles the water and the wine, may we come to share in the divinity of Christ, who humbled himself to share in our humanity. His humility gives us access to his divinity. And it's only by doing it his way that we're able to achieve the greatest humanization, which is taking on his sacred humanity and bringing ourselves into communication with that.
You said that Christmas should be celebrated every day in our hearts as Christians.
We Catholics, as a matter of fact, experience Christmas every day, every time we celebrate the Eucharist, because God once again takes flesh in the celebration of the Holy Eucharist. And so many Catholics are completely oblivious to that mystery, that as a matter of fact, the Mass is the continuation of the mystery of the Incarnation. And the Church is always very careful about that. So, for example, the Church tells priests that without strong pastoral necessity, a priest is not to celebrate Mass more than once a day, because familiarity breeds contempt. So we can get so used to this that we say, oh, sure, yeah, well, God became man. Yeah, well, we know that. Well, we should be struck by that. It's just such an astonishing concept, and it takes a quantum leap of faith in order to appreciate that, to appropriate that truth.
Father Peter Stravinskas is a noted scholar, author, and apologist. He is editor of The Catholic Response. In his message for Lent this year, Pope Benedict calls on Catholics to perform acts of penitence, fast, and dig into their pockets to help the poor. We asked Nigerian Bishop Anthony Gbuji how he understands the Pope's call from an African perspective.
At home, like in every other Christianity in Nigeria, as in any other nation, Christian nation, we take the time of Lent very seriously. It is time for us to recover God, to come nearer, closer to God, because at the center of Lent is the person of Jesus Christ, inviting us to come and be reconciled, to come and be reconciled with God our Father. Only Jesus Christ can reconcile us with God our Father, who created us after his own image, but we said no to him. We refuse to be reconciled with him. We refuse to love him, but he still loves us. God is always faithful. This is a time of Lent. We remember the mercy and love of God. And having shared the mercy and love of God, we go to share it with others, praying for them, giving them helps to drink, to eat, housing, clothes, and showing them respect, showing them the human dignity that they appreciate it. Definitely, the time for Lent is the time we remember that Christ did so much for us. He suffered, he died, but he rose again. The hallelujah of resurrection is a wonderful hope that our faith, through the sufferings, through the quarrel, the fight with sin, the struggle we have against ourselves, against the world, against the devil, that we are going to overcome, because Jesus Christ is a life, is a way, and is the truth that leads us to eternal happiness, where we sing hallelujah forever and ever. So Lent is a wonderful period of renewal, of strengthening of faith, hope, and love. And as we do that, we reach out to others. We can never be alone in God in heaven, because we belong to a good family, the family of the children of God. And that is why the Holy Father has written to us in the Lenten message to reach out to others and help them to solve their problems of poverty, to give them to eat, to help them to love, to help them to feel that they are children of God, the dignity of the children of God. And so, as we look at the image of Christ, we see it is possible. It is possible to love. It is possible to help others. It is helpful to respect other people. And it is possible to live together as one children of God, because Christ made us children of God.
Bishop Anthony Gbuji from Nigeria. That's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.